Our Father, again we thank Thee for giving us this opportunity to meet together, Thy children, in Christian fellowship, to study Thy Word. We know that the most valuable thing we have is Thy Word, the Bible, and we pray that Thou will put Thy Spirit upon us, open our minds, and give us understanding so that we may fully know all that Thou hast put in the book for our guidance. In Jesus' name, Amen. Well, we're still going in the book of Revelation, and as you have seen, it's slow going because there's an awful lot in it. There's 2,000 years of history in it. In fact, 3,000 as far as that goes, because it does cover the millennium. We had gotten into the matter of opening the seven seals. You remember the only one found worthy to open these seven seals was the Lamb, slain in sacrifice, which obviously was symbolic of Jesus Christ himself. And as he opened each of these seals, you didn't see what was or hear what was read from the scroll, what was written on it. But an event took place which was symbolical of a great event or series of events in history. And we saw that these seals portrayed the final collapse of the Roman Empire, the fourth and last of the Babylonian succession of empires. And we had finally gotten down through the sixth seal. Now, before we come to the seventh seal, there's a little parenthesis thrown in there, because it doesn't portray any stage in the collapse of the Roman Empire like the first six seals had. In Revelation 7, verses 1 to 3, we are told that four angels, having power to hurt the earth, were holding back the four winds of heaven so they couldn't blow. And they were told not to hurt the earth, the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. Now, if anybody thinks that Christianity is a new religion that's discarded Israel, you should get your eyes open immediately on this. This particular group, who are the servants of our God, are Israel, as the book expressly says. Now, the Bible has identified Israel, and only Israel, as God's servants. Isaiah 41, verses 8 to 10. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. Thou, whom I have taken from the ends of the earth, and called thee from the chief men thereof, and said unto thee, Thou art my servant. I have chosen thee, and not cast thee away. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. Yea, I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. And Isaiah 44, verses 21 and 22. Remember these, O Jacob and Israel, for thou art my servant. I have formed thee. Thou art my servant, O Israel. Thou shalt not be forgotten of me. I have blotted out as a thick cloud thy transgressions, and as a cloud thy sins. Return unto me, for I have redeemed thee. Now both of these passages were written after the 10-tribe northern nation of Israel had disappeared into the Assyrian captivity. So nobody can say that God cast off 10-tribe Israel, because here he makes it very clear. He has redeemed them. He has blotted out their sins. He is with them. So, in the book of Revelation, the servants of our God who are sealed are entirely of Israel. And Revelation 7, verse 4 says so. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. Nothing about the Congolese cannibals, nothing about the Chinese, just the children of Israel. Now, verses 5 through 9 go on to enumerate the tribes, 12,000 out of each tribe who are sealed. And here is something which some people have had considerable difficulty in understanding, that the number and names of the tribes don't come out the way you would expect. But we'll see when we look into it that after all, there is no real inconsistency there. All the tribes are named except the tribes of Dan and of Ephraim. Those are not mentioned. Now, actually, of course, there were 13 tribes of Israel, including the tribe of Levi, the priestly tribe. But Levi had no territory of its own. They were scattered through all the other 12. So looking upon them as independent states, you might say, each with its own territory, there would be only 12 and Levi not included. But here they're not talking about land areas and government, but that out of each tribe were sealed a particular group of 12,000 to each tribe. Now, it doesn't list Dan or Ephraim, but it lists the tribe of Joseph. Well, now, originally, of course, Joseph was one of the tribes. But then, on his deathbed, old Israel himself split Joseph into the two tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, the reason why Dan is not mentioned is clear. Not that God had anything against Dan any more than any of the other tribes. But all this phase of Revelation is dealing with the troubles and devastation that come upon the old Roman Empire. And by this time, Dan was gone completely outside of it. Dan was in no more danger from these plagues than people on the American continent were. Dan was already up on the shores of the Baltic Sea, in territory that Rome had never controlled. Now, as to Ephraim, the tribe of Manasseh is mentioned by name here as one of those from whom 12,000 were sealed. Well, if you talk about the tribe of Joseph, who was left out of the tribe of Joseph except the tribe of Ephraim? So actually, as it stands, Ephraim is really included in this, and Dan, as I say, was clear out of the picture as far as danger was concerned. Now I want to call your attention to one thing here. This chapter of Revelation speaks of two completely different separate groups. First is the 144,000 out of the 12 tribes of Israel who are sealed. Well, now you put your seal upon something as a mark of ownership. These were the servants of God. Then it goes on, Revelation 7, verse 9, after this I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. Now you remember the four winds of heaven that were to bring these disasters were held back until the servants of God were sealed so they would be protected. In other words, they do not go through these plagues. But of these people in this great multitude out of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, the remainder of chapter 7 speaks of these and says, these are they which came out of the great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of God, and serve him day and night in his temple, and he that sits on the throne shall dwell among them. That's particularly verses 14 and 15. Now, These have not been sealed to be protected from these plagues. These are people of this area of the Roman Empire who are going through these terrible judgments, and it'll include those within the worldwide judgment that we're all about to enter into now. Not kept out of it, not saved from it, but they have gone through it without weakening in their faith. They have remained loyal. So you can see how these are treated differently. In other words, people not of the Israel group have salvation open to them. All that Christianity promises in that way is open to them. But it still does not make them members of Israel with the particular job and the pay for it that is given to Israel. So that takes up this little parenthetical seventh chapter of Revelation. When we go on into chapter 8, we get back into the historical preview here. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. And I saw the seven angels which stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. And another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given to him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. Now in the tabernacle in the wilderness and in the temple in Jerusalem, you had out in the court of the temple the bronze altar. Your King James Version says brass, but that's a different alloy. It was bronze. The bronze altar on which the sacrifices were burned. But then, in the Holy of Holies, there was the golden altar upon which incense, not sacrifices, but incense, was burned. So you have here the same thing, the golden altar which was before the throne. Again, pure Israel symbolism, right straight through. So when the seventh seal was opened, nothing in and of itself happens. It's getting into a pretty solemn situation, and there's silent consideration of this thing for about half an hour before any of these things start to happen. Then you see the seven angels, each given his trumpet, and this other angel who is offering up incense and the prayers of the saints. Then it goes on, and the angel took the censer and filled it with the fire of the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. So this is the start of something even more serious in the way of trouble than what you've had out of the first six seals. This is leading up to something big. The voices and thunderings and lightnings, of course, the battle against what's coming, and the earthquake, the great shake-up of earthly institutions. And the seven angels, which had the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. So you see, you're going now from the mere opening of the seal into seven new stages, each of which is brought on by the blowing of the trumpet. Revelation 8, verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth. And the third part of trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. You remember that among the plagues brought upon Egypt, when Moses was trying to do a little salesmanship job with Pharaoh, it included hail mingled with fire. And it was destructive. It destroyed the crops of the Egyptians. So here, you have again one of God's plagues coming upon the ungodly. The third part of the trees burnt up and all green grass burnt up. Now the fall of the Roman Empire was in thirds, separate historical periods occupying separate thirds of the empire. The western third took in West Germany, Gaul, Italy, Spain, and Carthage in North Africa. The southeastern third took in North Africa generally, Egypt, Palestine, and Syria. And the northeastern third took in Asia Minor and the Balkans. So these three thirds of the Roman Empire were dealt with separately. Now, of course, the start of the empire was with the city of Rome. And naturally, it came to its judgment before the easterly part, with the capital at Constantinople, got it. First, the Franks, who were a mixture of seven Germanic tribes of Israel, they overran all of Gaul, and then Spain. In Spain, they seized ships in the ports and spread all over the Mediterranean shores, scattering their power in little colonies here and there, too small to do anything substantial. They only kept their power closely organized, really, in Gaul. Nevertheless, while they didn't become a force in the Mediterranean itself, they did emphasize the weakening of the Roman fleets, which were unable to stop it. Then the German tribe of the Alemanni overran northern Italy in 272 AD. Another group of Germanic tribes, the Suevi, the Alemanni, the Vandals, and the Alans, invaded northern Italy as far down as Florence in 406 AD. Then they retreated back to Gaul and into Spain. Now the Alans were the first to be driven westward before the invasion of the Huns. So you can see here the Alans coming in ahead of any of the others were moving into the Roman Empire. Then the Visigoths, under Alaric, besieged Rome in 408 and were bought off with a big ransom. They took it in 409, and it was of so little consequence that Alaric, instead of calling himself emperor now, merely appointed one of his officers emperor. And then in 410, Alaric captured it again and allowed his troops 6 days of plundering the city. Now, if you think the things happening to Rome were rough on it, they were. But remember how many cities Rome had plundered and looted in the past centuries. Chickens come home to roost. And Rome was reaping the fair harvest of the crop she had sowed. The successor of Alaric, Adolf, led the Visigoths out to South Gaul and into Spain, where they set up the Visigothic kingdom that was the dominant one in Spain until they were overcome by the Moorish invasion in 711 AD. The Suevis, the Alans, the Vandals, and the Burgundians moved on out again, crossed through Spain, and settled in southern Spain. And from there, the Vandals, under Genseric, crossed to Africa, or specifically to Carthage, in 429, and immediately commenced building themselves a powerful fleet. Rome couldn't do a thing about it, and 5 years later, 434 AD, the emperor formally ceded North Africa to the Vandals. Genseric built up an enormous navy. He just took over the whole Mediterranean Sea was what he did. He harassed even the coast of Italy and Greece, In 455 A.D., a Vandal fleet sailed up the Tiber River, captured and pillaged Rome, 14 days of looting. The Suevis, under their king Ricimer, also pillaged Rome in 472 A.D., and the last emperor of the Western Roman Empire was deposed in 476 A.D. After that, there never was an emperor in Italy anywhere. Well, now remember, this says the third part of the trees and the green grass was burnt up. Now, these Israel tribes had an awful lot to avenge, and they did it thoroughly. They really devastated the land when they went through. That was one of the bitter complaints of the conquered about them, that in the course of the siege, they cut down the trees and all that kind of thing. So they really left a thoroughly devastated land when they were through. But that was their job. Who was supposed to break the Babylonian succession of kingdoms? Who else but Israel? Jeremiah 51, verses 20 to 21 gives it. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war, for with thee will I break in pieces the nations, and with thee will I destroy kingdoms, and with thee will I break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee will I break in pieces the chariot and his rider. Nations, powerful armies, all this would not stand against them. So in a third part of the empire, you had this devastation and the destruction of the western part of the Roman Empire. Then you come to the second trumpet, Revelation 8, verses 9 and 10. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood, and the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. Now here again you remember that one of the plagues visited upon Egypt was that the water of the river Nile and the water in their wells and cisterns turned to blood. So here you can see consistent Israel symbolism going on in the last book of the Bible, the same as in the second book of the Bible. Well, the Vandals under Genseric really took over the sea. You may be sure of that. They destroyed the Western Roman navy. They laid waste the peninsula of Greece and Dalmatia, which is the eastern shore of the the sea beside Italy on the east coast. Adriatic. The eastern shore of the Adriatic Sea. And they even threatened Constantinople. Genseric went there and threatened to besiege Constantinople. Oh, he didn't make any very serious attempt at a siege, and it wouldn't have done him much good if he had, because he didn't know siege warfare. But anyway, the Emperor Zeno in Constantinople had to make a treaty of peace with him, respecting his authority over most of the Mediterranean Sea. This was in 476 A.D. So, the third part of the sea became blood, the third part of the ships were destroyed. Constantinople maintained a big and important navy, but they just about had to keep it in port to keep it from being destroyed. Then you come to the third trumpet, Revelation 8, verses 10 and 11. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp, and fell upon the third part of the rivers, and upon the fountains of waters, that is, the headwaters of rivers. And the name of the star is called Wormwood, or King James said. It's the word absinthe. And the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. From a plant called wormwood, they get a highly poisonous substance called absinthe, and a drink is made of this absinthe. It acts somewhat like LSD in producing all sorts of wild hallucinations. And like LSD, if you use too much of it, it does very serious and permanent brain damage. What is this now that took over a third part of the rivers and the fountains of waters? The Huns occupied the valleys of the Danube, the Rhine, and the Po. About 200 BC, the Huns, who were nomads, Mongol nomads on the steppes of Central Asia, overran the Chinese Empire and for a time held it and ruled it. But it was too soft living, and their power weakened in the next century, and it became evident that they weren't going to be able to hold the Chinese Empire in subjection. So they migrated onto the steppes near the Caspian Sea. After settling there a while, they were too numerous for that to take care of their flocks and herds, so they separated. One group went southward through Scythia, which had been previously vacated by the Israel tribe. Now, one thing may puzzle you a bit. If you read the works of various historians, written over a period of many centuries, and you don't stop to realize that changes take place in the course of centuries. There are a few of the later historians who talk about the Scythians as a very low type of Mongol people. But that is these Huns who were in Scythia long after all the Israel tribes had migrated out into Europe. So it's not a case of a mix-up as to what the Scythians were like. During the period of the Israel occupation of Scythia, they were white men like ourselves, and these Huns didn't get in there until all the Israel people were gone.